This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch. Instinctively, as a society, we condemn those who abuse any older person's trust and finances. But our guest today, Richard Robinson, from the specialist charity Hourglass, contends that such a moral response, while natural and understandable, comes far too late. Instead, Richard argues, what would be more valuable than the condemnation of such forms of economic abuse would be their prevention. And this is the mission of Hourglass, to not only respond to the economic abuse of older people, but also to prevent it happening in the first place. So I spoke with Richard about this mission, asking him just what essential service firms can realistically do to prevent such abuse, as well as better respond to it, why he feels that our society so strongly condemns the individuals who commit such abuse, but at the same time has historically overlooked the coordinated effort required to prevent it, and whether it is really true that economic abuse can literally shorten the life of an older person. So after the following message from our sponsor, we step into an issue which many like Richard feel is both abhorred but ignored.
Are you looking to strengthen your approach to vulnerability and consumer duty? Join the award-winning Vulnerability Academy, delivered by the Money Advice Trust in partnership with UK Finance. Over 200 professionals have already graduated, and Cohort 15 starts on 14th of April. Don't miss out. Sign up now at moneyadvicetrust.org/academy or click the link in the description.
Richard, welcome to Vulnerability Matters. Absolutely fantastic to have you here. Look, could we start by you introducing Hourglass, its mission on financial and economic abuse, and perhaps share an example or two just to bring this all to life?
So yes, Hourglass, or Hourglass Safer Aging to give it its full title, is the only UK-wide charity that looks to end the harm and abuse of older people. And that is through all forms of abuse, not just economic or financial, but also through neglect, psychological, and all forms of abuse, really. And it's just us from a UK-wide perspective, but we operate with lots of partners across the UK. To give you a kind of example of the type of thing we deal with, in the last 24 hours, we dealt with a lady who lives alone after the death of her husband, and her grandson moved in. And after a while, he persuaded his grandmother to let him have access to her bank account, and he set up online access. And after a period of just 6 months, he stole more than £12,000, and also prevented her from buying lots of things she needed, like food, continuing her day-to-day social activities. And the sad thing is that she was too ashamed to tell anybody until there was a trigger point. So somebody in her social circle noticed that something wasn't quite right and picked up the phone to us. And we were able to have his access revoked. But the sad thing was, at the end of it, she still felt like she was letting him down. And at the end, the grandson moved out. And that's just a very short example of the kind of thing we're dealing with our 24/7 helpline.
And one of the things I picked up when looking at the Hourglass website and some of the reports you've done is you repeatedly say that society often simply fails to see this type of financial and economic abuse of older people. Why is that? And how are Hourglass defining financial and economic abuse in the specific context of older people?
Hourglass exists in a really difficult zone because, as I've already mentioned, there is just us in terms of a UK-wide charity. Now, what that means is that we're continuously fighting for profile amongst lots of other domestic abuse and age-related charities. And the reason why that's so difficult is that people don't only fail to believe that the abuse of older people happen, but they don't want to even think about it when it does happen. It's almost too sad and too horrific to think about. And I could give you an example of a recent conversation I had with a very well-known daily newspaper who would not cover a case study that we were promoting because it was just too sad for their demographic. And so you might compare the type of domestic abuse you'd hear from younger women, for example, and lots of domestic abuse is focused around women, and it's correct that the vast amount of victims are women. However, older people generally do not get a fair crack of the whip. We are fighting for every penny we get, and it's a tough gig. It really is. And it's also tough for the victim because there are so many hurdles for them to jump through before they find anybody that can support them. And the sector itself is also sometimes quite challenging in the respect that lots of the major age sector charities don't have abuse specialists. So that means they come to us. And there is a particular type of member of staff called an IDVA, which is an independent domestic violence advisor. They're specialist caseworkers. And there's very few of them across the length and breadth of England and Wales. Slightly different in Northern Ireland and Scotland. They have a slightly different title, IDAs. But there are very few of them. So yes, it's a very tough landscape for our charity and for older victim survivors and their families generally. To answer your other question, financial abuse is old terminology now. We don't tend to use the term financial abuse. When the Domestic Abuse Act came to pass in 2021, that broadened the scope of what is now called economic abuse to include things like restricting victims' ability to work, the hours that they work, coercive control, what they can buy. So we would describe financial abuse as maybe an old terminology and economic abuse being the way forward now.
It's really interesting what you've said about the niche that Hourglass are filling. And I have to admit, when I was told about your excellent work, I was like, I've not heard of Hourglass and I've been working in this sector for quite a long time. How did Hourglass come into being and what role do you have there?
So Hourglass started in 1993. And we were very fortunate in our early days to share our offices in London with Age Concern, but we were never part of Age Concern. And it started off very much as a pressure group. We didn't launch our helpline until 1997. And we didn't launch a 24/7 helpline until 2021. Now we have all of these ways and means for people to contact us, not just a helpline. We have instant message and SMS. Now, I've only been with the charity for 7 years, but when I started, we were getting around 4,000 calls a year. Fast forward to 24, 25, and we're now getting about 12,000 calls a year and 75,000 touch points. And so many organizations describe Hourglass and the work we do as being specialist or niche, but there are actually 2.5 million people affected by the abuse of older people. So in no way can you call the abuse of older people niche or specialist. It's just underfunded and undersupported. And the lack of awareness is staggering, bearing in mind that we're going to have a population of older people the size of London, extra population by 2050. And yet the preparation we're doing for that is virtually zero.
But we'll tap in a bit more to some of that frustration that must exist around this being overlooked, but yet so prevalent. But first, can you tell me a bit about the patterns or trends of economic abuse that Hourglass are seeing through its helpline and its casework?
I think there is a common misconception that because of the economic climate, that there would be a huge rise in economic abuse cases. So rather than saying that that's necessarily a pattern or a trend, I would say that because of the profile of domestic abuse generally, we are getting more calls and we're seeing the amount of money stolen from older people rising rapidly. To put that into perspective, we are talking about the cost from a social and financial perspective to the general public of 16.6 billion around the economic abuse of older people. Another trend is we're seeing more men reporting. So as I said in a previous answer, largely women suffer hugely from domestic abuse. Around other forms of abuse, aside from economic, we might see maybe 25% of our cases come from men. When it comes to economic abuse, cases are almost parity, 50-50. Now, this is anecdotal, but what I've heard as well is that you tend to find men might call with a case of economic abuse. Women might call with a case of physical abuse or psychological abuse, and that would be a gateway to economic abuse. Now, we don't know whether that's purely an anecdotal evidence, but we're looking into that to see if there's more data there. an underlying trend is that economic abuse of older people appears to be far more genderless than any other form of abuse.
One statistic that really caught my eye in addition to that was, I think it was on your briefing papers, that 84% of economic abuse perpetrators are family members.
That's right.
Can you give us an insight into this trusted person dynamic and how that shows up in some of the cases you're seeing?
The vast majority of our cases, 84, as you've said, 84% are familial abuse. And I think one good thing to get out the way in answering this question is to end the notion that Hourglass deals with a lot of calls around care in old people's homes or similar establishments. We don't get that. We're probably around 10%, maybe slightly higher than that, of our calls come from old people's homes, care homes, so on. Now, and it's odd to say this, but actually some of those calls we do get from care homes are still the families that are abusing older people, but they're doing it when they come to visit or they're, I should say, the vast majority of people who look after their elderly relatives are, of course, wonderful and fully trusted. We should say that. But I think there is a real issue with the fact that older people don't like to criminalize their own families, and they don't like the notion of, look, if you tell anybody, you're going to end up in a care home. You're going to lose that care that you have if you tell anybody that we're doing this. So there is that underlying threat, which you don't generally have in any other vulnerability. There is also the economic climate at the moment. Now, I've mentioned that it's difficult for us to gauge whether the economic climate or whether it's the rise of profile around abuse generally is leading to the peaks and troughs that we see. But certainly there are parts of the economic crisis that we're seeing at the moment that is leading other family members to seek the bank of mum and dad in an illegal way. And that trend, I think, will only rise. Now, that is leaving some older people destitute. It's that simple. And it's down to us as Hourglass, but also the general public, to begin to take the abuse, all forms of abuse of older people, more seriously, and to have that degree of perhaps curiosity in trying to end the abuse of older people. Because it's with our curiosity as neighbours, volunteers, friends, other family members that we can begin to spot the signs and do something about it.
Is there something that makes economic abuse of older people particularly harmful due to that later stage in life?
I don't think from an economic abuse perspective that we have figures that talk about that. But I would say that the abuse of older people is life limiting. There is strong evidence that somebody who is abused in later life doesn't recover and ultimately shortens their life. It's that simple. So if you are abusing an older person, you are shortening their life, whether that's economically or any other form of abuse. And that is a heartbreaking statistic to say. Now, what can we do to spot that or do something about it? I think this is really difficult because at the end of the day, once it's happened, you're looking for what recovery might look like. And recovery is different for every type of victim survivor. So financially, of course, we're relying on the financial sector to help support with better safeguards and to also look at how the professional sector can better highlight the support that they give. It's all very well putting it in a bill or on a bill that you're sending somebody, but when you're talking to the individual and their families, you've got to make it more obvious that that support's there. And that's why I mentioned professional curiosity. So all abuse of older people is life limiting, and that's the bottom line.
So let's drill into that professional role. So if I work in an essential service, financial services, perhaps energy, water, telecoms, what are the key warning signs that an older customer might be experiencing financial or economic abuse?
Well, you're looking for somebody who has a long-term record of paying on time, who is suddenly struggling, who suddenly isn't able to pay. And you've got to wonder why. That's, as I say, about professional curiosity. You've got to spark a conversation and to dig a bit deeper into what's led to that. Now, there are certain points in time where the triggers are there. Bereavement is one particular time if you've got a customer who have just lost their partner and there is another family member that has suddenly taken over their finances, it's a question to be asked. You know, what safeguards are in place and how can we, who is taking over perhaps sole control of that person's account that has suddenly made it impossible for them to pay their bill and why? And so that's where I mentioned it again, the professional curiosity comes in.
If a staff member in an essential service gets the feeling they've picked up on something not being right in relation to an older customer's situation, is there a particular order of actions we should be thinking about taking to make sure that the customer stays safe and remains safe?
Well, I'm probably going to answer the question in a way you probably expect me to, which is that there is a stage before this, which is that our partners in the finance sector and across the utility should be working with Hourglass to train their staff accordingly to spot the signs. And to give you a fabulous example, my colleague Veronica Gray worked very closely with Danske Bank in Northern Ireland. And now Danske have done a fantastic job in training their staff and adopting the safer aging methodology into their policy and procedures. And we would heartily suggest that if not with Hourglass, then look at ways of training your staff accordingly to not just spot the signs, but to aid that professional curiosity. Because without training, you're going to miss those signs, those quite subtle signs. Now, I've already talked about what happens when you might have a sole signatory. There might be a bereavement moment. There might be a son or a daughter that's taken over the reins of that person's account, or another family member or another trusted volunteer, potentially. You've got to look at the powers of attorney and what's happening there. Has somebody now got an LPA, a lasting power of attorney, or a trusteeship or a deputyship? You've got to look at how can you ensure that you're talking directly to that older person rather than to an intermediary.
So it'd be interesting to hear a bit more about the safer aging methodology and kind of what you're offering at Hourglass. What's the offer there?
Now, recently we've changed our mentality a little bit in looking at how we can look at a prevent agenda and how we can do more work with professional services to ensure that they can spot the signs, they can look at how they can work with families. And that's one of the reasons why we use the term safer aging. Now, the charity was formed as Action on Elder Abuse. And elder abuse is another archaic term that we've stopped using because the word elder isn't quite right. And it's also worth saying that by the abuse of older people, we're talking about people over the age of 60. And we use safer aging because, would you believe, people didn't like working with a charity that had the word abuse in its title. So you have to look at ways of using your narrative. Safer aging also talks about independent aging. So how can we ensure that the next generation can live and age safely, free from harm and abuse? And we as a collective, whether it's the third sector, the charity sector, whether it's professional services, whether it's local authorities, trusts and government, should be working together to plan for that influx of older people that's coming our way. We're getting older. You know, there will soon be more people over the age of 60 than there will under the age of 18. And so therefore, how do we push that agenda to make sure that people can age safely and live independently? And that's why, for example, we have an innovative partnership with Churchill Homes, for example. We've started working with them recently to look at ways of getting the notion of independent, safer aging to their homes.
When we're speaking directly of an older person, we talked about identification, about some steps we might take. It can be difficult for people to open up. And you talked about some of the shame and the embarrassment and the reticence that people have. Is there anything that you've learned about how we start one of these conversations with an older customer where we're worried that something is going on? Do you have any tips or strategies for us?
Now, I'm not on the front line, so I don't take a great deal of calls from older people. But I do think that one thing is humanizing these calls. Now, we live in an age now where we're moving towards artificial communication, AI communication. The best way to get older people to communicate is to humanize the conversation and to make sure that you're not just ticking boxes. You need to talk to an older person to really get to know them. And I would strongly urge that if you're working in professional services, use your professional curiosity, talk to somebody, humanize the conversation and listen, and do active listening properly rather than box ticking.
In terms of support, what realistically would Hourglass expect of organisations to do, the support they might give when an older customer is at risk of economic abuse?
In a perfect world, I would want everybody who has front-facing communications to have a safer ageing strategy as part of their policies and procedures. I would strongly urge that to happen. I was in a ministerial meeting, I won't say with who, not that long ago, within the last 2 years, across the four nations, when I had to persuade a minister that older people required the same unique levels of support as child victims of abuse do. And at the time, I was wide-eyed about this. I thought, hold on a minute, I'm having to persuade a minister that an older person needs that unique support. Why is that? Now, that, I think, gives people an understanding of where we are. Where we are now in 2025, and we're still not there, that Childline has happened with Esther Anson, and people now see how horrific the abuse of children is. People can see how horrific abuse is from a domestic abuse perspective, but we're not there yet when it comes to the abuse of older people. And why is that? Now, I would say, and this is quite a controversial thing to say, that that's because we live in an ageist society. And it's up to professional services and other front-facing organisations to disprove that. So put safer ageing into your policies and procedures. Prove that you can deal with older people with respect and care and give them dignity and independence long into their life in the same way as you'll want to when you're older.
Richard Robinson, thank you very much. And that was Richard Robinson from Hourglass. If you'd like to learn more, go to www.wearehourglass.org or search LinkedIn for Richard Robinson Hourglass. And if you want to know more about the work of the Money Advice Trust, including our Vulnerability Academy, be sure to head to moneyadvicetrust.org/vulnerability. Well, that's about it for this episode. So until next time, stay alert, take action, and always remember that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.